present on the 10th or 11th? 11th, about 1:05, present Representative Grunberg, Taylor, Barnes, Navarre, Sun, Sharon. We have a large stack of bills to work on today, starting with House Bill 323.
Mr. Chairman, I move we adopt the CS for House Bill 323, Judiciary, the 31188, Chandler version. Ask unanimous consent.
Okay, motion to adopt the CS 323, the March 11th version. Any objection? Hearing none, CS is adopted.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Taylor.
I had a chance to review it, unless there are people who have amendments, I'd move to remove 323 to the committee.
I have a question.
Representative Barnes.
My question, Mr. Chairman, because I was absent yesterday, does this bill have any repealers in it of the former statute related to videotaping of children?
Look at section 4, I think those
there's
are repealers.
Title 12, or section 4, page 4, line 12, there's two repealers.
Could you tell me what those are, please?
I think they're in your packet, if you have your 323 packet there. Copies of the statute should be in here.
323. Here they are, Ramona. Two statutes. I've given them to Representative Barnes.
Okay. No, these are all in here. I see you put this one.
I can tell you whether they're, you probably can too. Yeah, this is. These are the two statutes, the ones you're referring to, are the ones that are repealed.
There is
somebody briefly tell me why you repeal these two statutes.
Stephanie, do you want to join us at the table? Do you have a... on the repealers?
The reason the statute that deals with excluding people out of the courtroom, that statute was addressed in a Supreme Court case called Globe Newspaper, and that statute was found to be unconstitutional by the U.S. Supreme Court. The videotaping statute affects a defendant's right to confrontation, and other states have repealed that statute and found that statute to be unconstitutional. Right now, those statutes aren't being used because they're unconstitutional. Ideally, we'd love to keep them in, but...
So, 1245-047, videotaping of testimony by young victims of sexual offenses is no longer legal.
Could I ask when?
So we're... if I can just say, this bill here is really an attempt to solve that problem by allowing closed circuit TV and other means and methods in the courtroom to achieve the same purpose. Is that one of the theories here?
That's one of them.
Representative Barnes.
My question is, could you cite me the date that these Supreme Court rulings took place?
I don't have the case with me, but I believe it's 1986 or 87. It was very recent. Probably
87. Is it
Alaska?
No, U.S. On the same theory, though.
Exactly. Or he wants to have.
Do you have the cases, John?
Here's the case right here on Globe Newspaper on 048.
I would appreciate it, even though we're going to pass the bill out, I hope. Can you get me as an officer, John?
Certainly. And you as well. And the whole committee. Certainly.
Yeah. Before this gets on the floor, I'd like to review that.
So this is head of the finance. Okay, there is a list here if people want to see. This is of the changes that were made in the CS, if you want to kind of take a look at the differences.
Do you want to motion?
There is a motion on the table to move CS from House Bill 323, Judiciary, the March 11th, 88 version, from committee with individual recommendations. Is there any objection to that motion? Okay, I would just note that basically the changes were from yesterday to change reasonably to effectively communicate and add in the guardian ad litem provision and amend the guardian ad litem law, which is the theories that we talked about. And we inserted the language from Representative Taylor, in addition to other procedures as it finds appropriate.
Just a technical thing, Mr. Chairman. If you look at Section 3, and Jack Chenoweth's a good drafter, but when they print this thing in the final, John, generally when they print a statute, they don't just do the sub 6, they do the whole statute. I think that probably whole thing ought to be printed out. Jack ought to check with the town clerk on that.
Whatever draft he wants to do. Okay, any objection to moving the bill? Hearing none.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee members.
Thank you, Mr. Sarkhammer, for your patience and hard work. Do you have any other bills in this coming this committee?
They're coming to Wednesday.
Okay.
Good.
Can we take up the radio?
House Bill 344, an act relating to irrigation of food. 388. Representative Phillips, Chair of Giants.
Did we amend this in Hess?
Yes.
Yeah, there's a Hess version. CS.
We included it.
That's right.
The only. John,
Representative Phillips.
I just want to let you know there is a fiscal note that DEC has put on this, so I think we'll have to have a finance referral.
Okay, yeah, the speaker will make that when it comes right across, that he'll know the fiscal note being attached and get a finance referral on it.
Mr. Chairman, I'm...
Is it a substantial fiscal note, Randy?
$13,000.
Yeah. Is there any...
My only problem is I hope we can get this thing scheduled finance very soon.
I'll
get it hung up.
I'll speak with the chairman there if you'd like me to. Does anybody have any questions on the bill at all? Okay. Representative Grunberg.
I move the House Committee substitute with individual X.
Motion to adopt the committee substitute House Bill 388 Hess with individual recommendations. Any objection? Representative Taylor.
No
objection. I'm
going to
move on to the next bill.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I don't have any more bills coming through, so.
Thank you, Randy. Right. You have it all as
a
two
now. Okay. It's House Bill. Which one, 25 or 344?
Well, let's take what we can do.
25, another minority bill. This is minority bill day. Okay, this is an act relating to equal employment opportunity and affirmative action. There's a committee substitute prepared by the Judiciary Committee. I think the testimony that came in on this bill was the day that I wasn't here. I think Representative Ulmer chaired the committee that day, so maybe somebody could...
I wasn't here either.
No, we got it over the day that you weren't here. Want to testify?
We did, yeah.
Do we have someone that wants to testify on the bill? Do you care to join us?
The day that he wasn't here, we didn't take testimony.
No, I'm sure.
But one day
we had
to schedule another day, and he
wasn't
here, and
well,
you weren't here
either.
Okay.
Do you want to give your name?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Lydia Jones. I'm a legislative assistant to Representative Martin.
Oh, good.
On the date that you weren't here, we heard a lot of testimony on the bill, and most of the testimony was in favor of keeping the duties of the Office of Equal Employment Opportunity as is, and this legislation would sort of empower that office to take certain action with regard to employees who have filed discriminatory complaints against the state and have won. And we had worked in conjunction with the governor's office. He was in the process of reorganizing and consolidating the state EEO offices, and so the Judiciary Committee substitute was prepared to switch the impact from the Office of Equal Employment Opportunity to the Human Rights Commission, and this was to sort of keep in line with the governor's reorganization. However, the testimony that was offered was in favor of keeping the Office of EEO as is with its duties regarding resolution of complaints. And Representative Martin is in favor of keeping those duties where they are right now. And we request that you would pass the legislation, the State Affairs Committee substitute out. Hmm.
Did you have a chance
to read the CS?
That was the draft CS that was prepared in conjunction with the governor's office. And that was developed just sort of to keep in line with the governor's reorganization. And as we have not heard from the governor's office or the Department of Administration with regard to their position on this, as I said, the testimony that we heard before was in favor of keeping the duties, the complaint process in EEO, and that's basically what we support. So we request that.
Mr. Chairman, we had extensive testimony from individuals in support of leaving this function in EEO on a day when we were in a different committee meeting. Mm-hmm. And that's why we're talking about the State Affairs Commission instead of the
Judiciary. But we don't want to adopt this Judiciary CS.
We want to pass out the State Affairs.
And there was a 2014 version, we forget that too.
Forget that too.
Okay, so this is the one.
Okay, hey, I just let John let us know where we're at here.
The Judiciary CS was prepared from the committee blank CS that Representative Martin's office prepared. The only difference between the two bills is where the duties are located, whether they'll be in the Human Rights Commission or the Division of EEO. I met with the governor's office and they have a preference for it being in the Human Rights Commission. The testimony certainly was to leave it in the EEO. We took it, you know, from the public at this committee.
So the governor's in his reorganization of what he's doing would like to put this, all of this together in Human Rights Commission.
These duties.
Representative Gruenberg.
Yes. Mark of my staff has looked at this and made a suggestion, and I would request the courtesy of the committee allowing him to stay, and I think what he said is important.
Mark, do you want to join us?
Yeah. The question that I had was, I'm Mark Hanley, staff attorney to Representative Gruenberg. The question that I had to deal with line 20, where it says it would require the agency to change its selection procedures if it finds that the procedures have a discriminatory effect on members of a protected class. Usually when you are talking about discrimination law, you look at more than just a discriminatory effect. The fact that something has a discriminatory effect may or may not invalidate the hiring procedure. For instance, might be able to show statistically that women were, totally hypothetically, were worse marksmen than men if you took it, and that they had a harder time passing this particular test. Statistically, you'd have to also look at whether that was a reasonable job requirement as well, and it's usually a balancing test rather than just showing that a particular requirement has a discriminatory effect and that's enough to throw it out. You have to look at whether or not the requirement itself is strictly tied to the job. What my recommendation was that you might want to consider adding the language after discriminatory effect without a legitimate and important purpose or something along that line.
Mark, what is a protected class?
Protected class, which would depend on that. I'm not familiar with the state's law, but under federal constitutional law, protected class would be basically race, and then there's an intermediate class would be for sex. Discrimination has an intermediate level of scrutiny, and probably under state law, I think you'd include religion. But if something discriminated against a class would be race or sex, basically, I would think. Also disabled people, and maybe age.
I want to give an example here of something that I find I have a difficult time with happening in my community, and that's the hiring practices on the ferry system. For example, I have a person I graduated with in high school in 1967, worked on the ferries in the 70s, about 3 years, quit, went off to do something else, came back and applied to get on the ferry work in the stewards department, work he'd done in the past for the ferry system, and was told he wasn't qualified and didn't have enough points on the application form because they have this point system you go through to get 90 points or 100 points to get on. At the same time, the ferry system hired two people from Mexico who were not American citizens, who did not have even alien cards. You couldn't get a green card unless you had a job opportunity, and you couldn't get a job opportunity unless you had one, but they went down and got an intent to hire, went down to the place and got hired, and they don't speak English. They got on, and I think if you ride the ferries, and Representative Taylor rides them a lot, you'll find a lot of older people. You will not find any young people hired on the ferry system any longer. And if you ask them why, it's because they've got this hiring practice. And we said, well, that doesn't sound right. I mean, there's young Alaskans, born and raised in Alaska, who are being discriminated against because of your hiring practice. They go to the Attorney General. Attorney General looks over their practice and said, your hiring practice is valid and is constitutional, and whatever you do. My argument is, it doesn't work. You know, it's saying you got to have one high aspect is work history or experience. Well, a 50-year-old gets experience. You get experience in steward department for working in a diner, right? If you flipped eggs when you were 18 years old, you get to write that down. You know, if you wash clothes in a laundry when you were 28 to 29, you get to count that. You know, and anything that relates to a similar type job on the beach, you know, in a hotel or laundry type facility. Well, let me tell you, when you're 18 and 19 years old, you don't have any of that experience. So you don't get it. And you're not a protected class because, one, you're white, or even if that, you're native. I have a lot of natives in my community that have been trying to get on the ferry for years, and they don't fit. And I'm just wondering where the heck we're headed here. And I just throw it out. I don't want to discriminate against anybody. I don't want to say anybody's better or different. I'm just saying that our hiring system doesn't seem to work. And I don't know if this bill has anything to do with that at all. I have no idea. And I just like an answer.
It does, John, to one extent. This bill affects the enforcement agency through which people would enforce and require changes in those ranks. The problem is what has happened over the years is the various oddball cases out there have forced quotas and forced other affirmative action programs that are now having this backwards kind of result.
Representative Ulmer?
I was just going to say that your comments bring to mind testimony on a bill which I have in the State Affairs, which deals with the classification and hiring system in the state of Alaska. It doesn't specifically address affirmative action or classes of protected individuals. It just affects how people get jobs and what the rules are associated with it. Just lots of crazy rules that have nothing to do with affirmative action, okay? And the more I have learned through hearings on that bill, the more I have become convinced that there are serious problems with the hiring process. But I think that is a significantly different issue than this bill, which is really just asking the question, should there be some protection for those individuals that have filed a complaint? And if there should be some protection for those people, what is the right place for this protection to come from, EEO or human rights? And I think it's EEO, not only because of the principal purpose of that operation, but also because of the testimony we heard about the years of backlogs in the Human Rights Commission that makes it, for all practical purposes, an ineffectual agency at this point. So that is why I support the sponsor's version, which he is requesting of the State Affairs Committee version.
Yeah, I would just note one other thing that I see happening in the ferry system. It has to do with health insurance and our inability to solve that problem in this state, is that we have a lot of elderly people, I would say elderly people, older people in their 50s, 5560 who are applying to go to work on the ferries for the purpose of working for 5 years to get vested in the state retirement system. Not for anything to do with money, but when you're vested, you get your medical coverage. Mrs. Bud Bodine is one. There's several out there that have just taken my advice to say, I can't get you medical coverage. You can't get covered under any plan out there. I said, go become a state employee. Right? And they're taking up a lot of these jobs. And we don't have any youth initiative program. We don't have young people working on our ferry system. And that's just another incentive of why they do it. The other thing is run for borough office and become a borough member for 5 years and you can get your medical. But Representative Grunberg.
Mr. Chairman, not to dispute what the chairman of the State Affairs Committee said, but I think what Mark is saying here is looking specifically at the language in one subsection of the bill, and that's subsection 4. And his question is really a technical one, does not go to the underlying thing. And I would request that we give staff over the weekend to talk to legal counsel on that technical question. I think it's something we need an answer for, and I don't have an answer. We request that we do that. Should be able to have that by Monday.
Which?
I'm looking at the state affairs version. Yeah, it's subsection 4 there is what we're really looking at. Lines 20 to 22, and to work with the legal counsel over the weekend on that decision in the next few days to get an answer.
Okay, what's the specific question?
Is whether we should also, besides just requiring a showing of discriminatory effect, whether there shouldn't at the same time be require a showing that it has a discriminatory effect with no legitimate or important state interest. You could tailor it how loosely by saying if it had no compelling interest, that would put the burden on the state to show that if it had any disproportionate effect, you'd have to show a compelling interest in having that specific procedure. You could tailor it loosely by saying it had no legitimate state interest.
I think at this point, don't get hung up on the language. What we need to do is to get a legal opinion as to the effect of this thing.
Okay, so the decision, if I see the request, is one for us to look at the state affairs version in terms of leaving EEO over there. Okay, that's kind of a consensus here. And secondly, Mark and John, you guys to work on lines 20 through 22 on page 1 of state affairs and bring us back language on Monday, be the first item up Monday. Okay? $344. Get rid of all the easy ones first. This is an act relating to the protection of persons with disabilities to disabled adults, victims, physical and sexual assault. The question that we had left ourselves with was the list of mandatory reporting, and to the degree that we got one type of list for 0 to 18 year olds for mandatory reporting of abuse. This bill deals with disabled adults 18 to 65, and then we have elderly reporting of over 65. That it appeared that the list that's in section 3 on page 2, this list was different than the other two lists, and staff was asked to look that up, make out a or at least give us some comparisons here. The overall answer I get from John is that of all, after looking at all three lists, this seems to be the most modern and up-to-date of the list of mandatory reporting. But John, why don't you let us know where
we're
at.
In your packets are all three lists. And as you just said, this list is, first of all, closest to the list in the elderly abuse, protection of the elderly statute, with the appropriate changes for disabled adults. In other words, in the protection of the elderly statute, it says a staff employee of a project funded by the Older Alaskans Commission, while in the House Bill 344, it says the staff employee of the project serving disabled adults. Otherwise, the two lists match up quite closely, the House Bill 344 list has statutory references to the definitions of police officer, mental health professional, and the three lists are in your packet. Representative Gall said that he didn't really favor turning this into an act relating to reporting of abuse. And as I said, this looks like the best list of all three.
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Grunberg.
As the other representative has been really involved with this, I would hope that this was originally, 344 was originally just to cure some minor amendments in Senate Bill 1, and it was to deal with disabled adults. And then Representative Gall requested to put his little bill in with this, dealing with disabled adults only. And I would hope we would keep it to persons with disabilities in that subject rather than broaden it to.
Yeah, I'm just trying to say, in the protection elderly, there's 13 categories. We've got 16 here. If I can see the difference, the add-on is number 5 on line 17, which is caretaker of a disabled adult. Line 23, no, that's the same.
Number 6 is also.
Guardian or conservator.
Although if you look
at... Well, you have guardian or conservator in the other statute. I guess you don't have the word disabled adult, but you have guardian or conservator.
A guardian is technically under AS 13.26. The conservator is under there, too, but... Basically, what they've done is they you can have somebody who's a caretaker and not a guardian or a conservator. Then at some point, maybe they'll amend the elderly thing.
Okay, we have licensed foster care provider on line 26 is a new one. And number 14, paid employee domestic violence sexual assault program is a new one.
That's in the child abuse.
So, in terms of the elderly statutes, number 5, line 17, number 13, and number 14 are the add-ons.
Do you want a motion?
What's the committee's pleasure here? The issue was, should we try to conform these? Should we look at them? You know, we just wanted to examine it back and forth. The answer back is, I don't know that we want to go in changes to change the other statutes. We could take some of these out, leave them in.
I would prefer just to leave it the way it is. I think this is well drafted. You know, at some point, maybe we'll look at these other statutes. But I'd like to leave the bill in the way it is. This is Representative Paul's
section. Any other comments, Representative Taylor?
We haven't really talked about the last provision, immunity from liability and retaliation. I'm not sure it's necessary to copy paragraph A. I'm worried about that. I don't have any problem with the whistleblower concept of protecting that, but at the same time, it's the situation where I've got an employer sitting out there with an employee who and you disgruntled or upset for other purposes, and on the verge of getting candy, turn in something, and all of a sudden you can't touch it.
No, that's what, Mr. Chairman, that's why the...
Yeah, we went through that argument on the whistleblower bill, I think. I don't know if there's any way we found to get around it.
Not either.
And the phrase,
that's why I always hesitate when I see these.
The phrase is in good faith, and I think that's the only protection that we have when we have that.
Regard to
it just becomes the report, right? It becomes a factual matter at the time, and I know we spent a day or two going around on that a couple of years ago. Seems like years ago anyway.
I guess to Mr. Harrell, as you went through these, can you explain any of the rationale as to why one is in one place and one isn't in another place, or is it just the accident of who happened to be sitting on judiciary at the time that the bill came through? And
the time. My theory was that the year that it was passed. The child protection is the oldest by far. Then came the protection of the elderly, and today we have this. That more people are required to report later in time the bill is passed.
So we have 7 classifications under child protection. We have 13 under protection of the elderly, and now we have 16 under protection of disabled adults. I think that theory probably sounds about right. Sounds about how the legislature would operate. Representative Taylor.
Yeah, on the first paragraph, I guess we're changing the existing law by adding 4 causes of property damage. Mm-hmm. It seems to me if a guy's driving a vehicle down the street, runs into somebody in a wheelchair and causes damages to the wheelchair, he's probably liable for it. Whether this just seems to be a restatement of what the law really is. Whether it was written in this law or not, the person's going to be liable. Why do we need to have it?
Well, Mr. Chairman, this was something that it would have been a technical amendment to Senate Bill 1. You don't need to have any of this whole thing, but as long as you have it, I just wanted to make it clear that you still have a right to sue for your wheelchair. It's not going to do anything.
Good. This is in a Senate bill?
It's in a bill that we passed, remember? The one that passed last year. And we didn't want to put this in the bill, any of this stuff in the bill, because we didn't have to send it back and take a chance on using the whole bill.
I'm amazed that people can even remember that. You know, I think about doing that stuff every year, and I can remember what bill I let go and which one I didn't. I'm impressed. Okay, any other comments on the bill?
No.
I move the bill as individual.
Okay, there's a motion to move House Bill 344, Hess version, unamended. Individual recommendation.
I'll object at this point just because this is the first from the Judiciary Committee this year.
No, not really. We've done a couple.
We have moved a couple, haven't we?
Yeah. Okay.
I'll let it.
Any objection? None? Moves. Representative Ulmer, House Bill 465. An act relating to criminal proceedings involving certain minors, mending another court rule, 45A,
and
45D2, it's almost like letters of intent.
Not quite.
Do you care to explain the bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Letter of intent seems to be in section 1.
That's right. That seems to be the easiest way of approaching letter of intent. You've done this with other bills yourself, Mr. Chairman. You said put it in section 1.
I think
the Speaker is probably going to prefer this approach. But the concept behind the bill, as is stated in the findings and purposes, is simply to provide that in those cases where there is a victim or a witness under the age of 16 years of age, that the proceedings be expedited to the extent which is practical. There is no mandatory time period, no specified hoops through which one must jump. It simply says that any motions or requests for delay would be carefully scrutinized by the court, so that there is a preference in light of expediting as opposed to delaying. This is not a new concept. There are many other states that have adopted some version of this. We looked at about 30 other states and the language that they have used, and some of them are considerably stricter than this approach. They do, in fact, have specific deadlines. We decided not to go that approach, but simply just to have a strong statement and, of course, leave it up to the judge. The judge will have to determine in each situation what is appropriate, but this expresses legislature's intent to encourage judges to expedite these cases.
Okay, Representative Taylor.
Yeah. We already have a standard basically set by the Supreme Court on Rule 45. Rule 45 is a speedy trial. It's an incorporation of the Fifth Amendment, or yeah, I think it's the Fifth and the Sixth of the Constitution. And basically what it says is you've got to have your trial, with a criminal trial, within 120 days of the time that arraignment occurs. And the courts calendar themselves based on that 120-day rule, and you have to have a specific waiver with, in the case of a minor, you have to have it not only personally done by the minor in front of the court, but the court inquiring as to why there is a delay, and guardian ad litem, attorney, every party involved with the minor has to concur in that, or else the waiver has not been effective as concerns the minor. I agree with Representative Homer that the delays are just too long within the system, but I think that we already have. Are you suggesting we should move up faster than 120-day rule?
What I'm suggesting is that the speedy trial rule, as it applies to all kinds of criminal cases, still leaves many of these cases with a long period of time between the time when the case is charged and ultimately tried. And this simply says that among different kinds of criminal cases, those involving children under the age of 16 will receive the preference, if at all possible, of being treated more quickly than others, recognizing the public policy involved associated with the peculiarities of cases involving children.
I guess that's the only question. Thank you for that answer.
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Grunberg.
I have a couple concerns here. Number one, obviously, there's a large fiscal note. The public defender has some adverse comments on this thing. We probably need to have some testimony by them and the court system.
We were unable to get the teleconference today because the teleconference system was booked up. And we didn't have enough influence to pry it away from someone else. So there is some testimony that them and public defender and the court system would offer on that.
I have a, it's a little bit of an unusual suggestion, but I have an interest in this. And the interest is that in other kinds of cases involving children, and I realize this is outside the scope of the bill as presently drafted, child custody cases I'm talking about particularly, they often take months to get through. And during this whole period of time, the kids are in terrific turmoil. And it's very, very upsetting and causes lots of emotional problems with the family. There is a court rule that requires expedited appeals in custody cases. There is no rule or statute giving a preference on the calendar to custody disputes. There is a provision in the Uniform Child Custody Jurisdiction Act that, under this Uniform Act, requires interstate custody questions to be given calendaring preference. But there isn't, and that's only a question concerning the jurisdiction, not the merits of the trial itself. And I have long thought that the court system ought to seriously consider scheduling with a preference custody decisions involving children, particularly little children. But we've never had either a rule or a statute on it. When the family law section, the Alaska Bar family law section, had a lawyer come before us and say we ought to expedite appeals, the family law section suggested the Supreme Court amend its appellate rules, and they did so, as I've indicated. I would like to have the Judicial Council, and this is just a suggestion to the maker of the sponsor of the bill, take a look at this issue and the issue of other kinds of cases involving children, the custody things that I'm recommending. And I would like to see that if they could do that fairly quickly, and we could look at this whole thing, because these civil cases are disruptive to kids. These criminal cases are obviously disruptive to children. And let's see what we should do as far as calendaring cases involving children.
The Judicial Council will be here in committee on the 21st. So
that's it will be physically here.
So we'll, I think, are they all coming or just?
Just the staff.
Staff. So I think that's one issue we could put on that.
I'd like to make that an agenda item.
Representative Taylor?
Yeah, the I certainly have a lot of empathy and concern for the issue that's brought up here, but I think what we're really saying is, we need to look at the overall problem. We have a court system that attempts to set some prioritization within it. And its first priority right now is criminal cases. These are criminal cases. So they're already in the first priority category. What we're trying to say now is we're going to take and make them kind of a super first priority category because they involve children.
First of the first.
Yeah, first of the first, which means that if a children's case, a juvenile case comes up, it's going to be heard, if it's competing with an adult criminal case, it will be heard before the adult criminal case. The calibrating of cases in Anchorage got to the place here a couple, 3 years ago, where if you had a civil case set on the calendar, they put you on, I can't remember, they had a cute term for it, trailing calendar. Yeah. Which meant you fly all your expert witnesses up and you're ready to go on a $1 million civil case. Mm-hmm. Everybody shows up at court, mm-hmm. and the judge announces that morning, sorry, you're bumped off the calendar today. The two neurosurgeons you flew up from California and you're paying $5,000 a day to have sit around to testify in your contingency case, they're going to have to sit a few more days. We hope to get you on and started on Thursday. Then on Thursday they come back and say, sorry, you were bumped again because another criminal case came up. Now you're on the trailing calendar beginning 2 months from now. That's what was happening to people, and really still is to some extent. The expedited processes they set up in Anchorage have helped a lot to get things turned around. But basically what you need is, you need to have a few more judges if you're going to speed things up. That means biting the bill on some costs. And to bounce kiddie cases above other cases at this point is probably a good idea as far as kids are concerned and getting those things dispatched. That if we actually look at the record, you won't find very many children's cases are actually tried. In 6 years acting as a master, I never actually tried one, and I can't remember Judge Schultz or any other judge in the district actually trying a juvenile case during that period of time.
This isn't a juvenile, this is a case where the child is a victim or a witness. Look at line 22.
I know, but you talk about a criminal proceeding where the child is involved in a victim or a witness.
Prosecuting witness.
So it's prosecuting witness. So that means that the murder case, if it's got a little kid in it, goes ahead of other murder cases.
There is a note here in the PD's thing that says a substantial number of these cases go to trial because of the mandatory jail term of 8 years. So.
But if you're talking
that
about
presumptive
sexual,
came in
if
after.
We're talking about sexual abuse cases, if that's all we're seeing, then we're moving all sexual abuse cases up, which is going to further delay juvenile cases.
Well, the bill, I think, just treats all criminal proceedings who the witness or victim is under the age of 16. Is that correct? Representative Ulmer, do you have a comment?
If you would look at the second page of the bill, Representative Taylor, on Section 3, I think it's important to say that this does not mean that all cases calendared have to be recalendared and have these come to the front line. All it says is that any efforts for delay would be seriously scrutinized, recognizing the public policy associated with expediting these cases. So it does not necessarily have the effect of bumping another criminal case or bumping your $1 million civil case. It simply says that as a matter of public policy, we are recognizing that these should not be delayed. And so if there are efforts to do so, they should be very carefully scrutinized. And that, you know, I think it may be slightly shifting the balance in favor of these cases being expedited. It does not force them to preempt all other kinds of cases, even all other criminal cases.
Well, but compliance with this would, to some extent, say to the courts, in setting up your future calendars, somehow you've got to have a notification procedure of some type from either the prosecuting, I guess from the prosecuting attorney, who has to say, yes, among the list of witnesses that I have is a child under 16, or I have a victim in this case under 16. Therefore, this case should receive expedited treatment over all the other cases that I have on your docket.
It doesn't say that.
You have to. I got to understand how Section 3 works. Who has the burden of showing that the delay is has an effect on the well-being of the minor. If I understand that right, what you're doing is adding into
the moving part.
The delay on the well-being of the minor. Okay, who has the opposing party just says no? The moving party has to allege this has no effect on the well-being of the minor. I'm just trying mechanically to get how this thing works.
I think they make a prima facie case. They would in the motion say that although the victim is a minor, we do not believe that will have an effect.
This is witnesses too.
Yeah, or witness. I'm not using that as an example. And then the party opposing the delay would have to show, since presumably they would be the party seeking the benefit of the statute, that doesn't have, that it is going to have an adverse effect on the kid.
Okay, well, we don't want to get into back to the experts here. I think we just went through that theory on the last bill.
That's what you would have here. So.
Oh, yeah.
And by the way, let's say for some reason, but let's say we're a sharp criminal lawyers, and we are defending Joe Safeway robber, and Joe happened to have robbed the Safeway at the time little Johnny Jones is buying a candy bar, and you're going to have him as a defense witness, and you want, or let's say you want to really speed your case up.
He'd be a prosecution.
No, he could be a defense witness.
Okay. He was shoplifting the candy bar.
He was shoplifting the candy bar, whatever's happening. Okay. You want to jack the system around a bit. You could say, hey, I've got this kid, and it's going to take them a while to get back their key witness, prosecution witness from Mexico, where he's vacationing in Acapulco, and we have Johnny, who's my key defense witness. We've got to go to trial right now, because this is really tough on Johnny. I'm just giving you a hypothetical, crummy example. But
and I guess in that hypothetical, crummy example, somebody would have to establish that there was something emotionally disturbing involved in the delay of that.
No question.
Which, you know, admittedly, I guess what we're talking about is adding an additional factor for the judge to consider when he receives a motion to continue or delay the trial.
Well, it could affect the well-being of the minor. It doesn't say emotional. It should be fast, because the well-being of the minor is going to be affected because his parents are taking him on a vacation to Hawaii.
Well, show me the judge that's going to consider
I'm
that,
just,
John.
I'm trying to get into well-being and the efforts. Yeah. Okay.
It would affect my well-being if I was going to Hawaii, I'll tell you that.
Okay. Any other comments on this? I'm going to give some to the people who are opposing this or the court system also. One I want to see is what is the real problem or how the court system is really operating now. On these cases, I mean, are they being substantially delayed, or actually are they moving them up to the head of the calendar anyway? Are they trying to treat them that way? Secondly, the public defender has attached what I would feel is a substantial fiscal note to this, and I'd like to
the kind of fiscal note that shows you that they really don't want the bill passed. I love this, I really do. Part of their statement is that there appears to be no need for it because these are already being expedited, and then they attach a $250,000 fiscal note to say that it isn't being done.
Well, they certainly should have the opportunity to explain that irony.
Yes, I certainly would love to hear that explanation. Yeah.
And I have a phobia against large fiscal notes this year that don't take care of my problems.
The committee is always free to do a revised fiscal based on what they consider the reality.
Okay. This bill obviously wasn't in the State Affairs Committee. How did it get around that?
I don't know.
Did State Affairs look at this, or did they?
It didn't get a referral to State Affairs.
I mean, the Hess?
Hess
waived it to you because the understanding that you would be the appropriate party to hear these.
Okay, well then we've got a hearing. I was just wondering if there was some prior testimony on it someplace.
Have you heard from the court system?
No.
Because the court system verbally told me that they had no problems with it and would have a zero testimony.
I haven't heard from them at all. We were going to ask them.
So we have the letter from the Department of Health and Social Services supporting it. Dana Fabes opposition, and that's all you have?
So far, I would like to hear from the court system, and I'm going to ask John, see if we can't get the... Anchorage used to have a guy who was in charge of calendaring up there, and I don't know who that is in their Anchorage administrative system of when they put their calendar system together.
There are several different calendaring systems. There's a calendaring department that handles the criminal division.
Well, that's all.
There's the civil division. Each judge does their own. The family court division, I think, is under calendaring, but it's got a new family court judge as of April 1st. It is the screwed up deal.
I'd be delighted to work with Representative Greenberg on the question as to whether or not this should apply to
It is an ancillary.
I don't mind that. My advice is don't broaden it.
I'm not suggesting. I think at some point we need to have a study on this whole calendaring question. It's terribly inefficient in Anchorage.
Well, let's bring it up on the Judicial Council.
Anchorage has to do is follow the same rules of court that everyone else follows, and they don't have any problem on calendaring.
Good luck.
Never followed them.
We're getting close. It's amazing. I'm going to start more of these at 1 o'clock. Okay, a couple items, mechanical items here. We had 3 appointments referred to the committee for our consideration of various things. You had some resumes out. Haven't heard anything back. I'm going to ask John to prepare a letter of our endorsement and have it Monday here. So Lou Williams is one of them. I don't know who the other two are.
Mr. Chairman, while you're thinking about that, I just noticed that Fran has
Of
us?
I would note that they used to be published in 3-ring binders. The court went to this, and that's a saving of $60,000 a year to print them this way than in the old way.
And they're much handier to use.
But the problem that we're doing is we're amending so many of them, they're going to have to reprint 3 versions of it. Now, you used to just reprint the rule they amended, and you put it slipped it into your 3-ring binder.
They just print a page and
we
staple it over.
Yeah.
They come out yearly. They have a supplement.
The people we have, Sandra Stringer and Lou Williams Jr. to the Board of Governors, Alaska Bar Association, and Leona Okoko.
Is Sandy Springer an attorney?
Barrel?
Is who?
To the Judicial Council.
No, Lou Stringer is the editor of the Cashikan newspaper.
Lou Williams.
Sandy
Springer.
Sandy Stringer is a lawyer from Fairbanks, I believe.
Is she an attorney?
I thought she was a layperson.
She's got to be a layperson.
Oh, these 2 laypersons?
Yeah, we don't appoint the lawyers.
Lou is kind of almost up to the paralegal range now.
Yeah, he's going on the board this time. He was on the Judicial Council. He's been on the board, though, for some time.
Been on the board, too. Okay, those are coming back. Victims' Rights Bill coming up on Tuesday. Representative Donnelly's bill. I'm wondering if anybody wants to work on that between now and Tuesday.
I've been working with Donnelly on it. Which bill? Before?
Victim rights. I don't know what the bill number is.
296.
I mentioned to Representative Donnelly it may be helpful if somebody here wanted to work on that before we had the hearing.
I'll work with him.
Okay. You want to work on that?
No.
Representative Ulmer, Representative Taylor. Okay. It's House Bill 296. It's on Tuesday's calendar.
We're done?
No, I have an issue that affects Representative Taylor and I, and that's a introduction of resolutions. I think in the Petersburg Forest Service issue that we apparently have the sponsor substitute to gut bills and go through and put all new topics is really running in contra to the 45-day rule. So I was going to ask permission of this body if the 2 of us could use Judiciary Committee to introduce a resolution on that issue.
So moved.
Is that anybody?
To clarify that you cannot simply substitute a brand new bill for your existing rule. No. What you're saying?
Yeah.
No. Not to clarify that.
They're just going
to
use.
Not to clarify.
We're just going to introduce.
They need a vehicle.
And I just. Representative Taylor, I know, has written the resolution, and I'm just asking if we can use the Judiciary Committee to introduce it. Is that, anybody object to that? Okay.
No objection.
Okay, Representative Navarre.
I was just wondering when we're supposed to get the
workers' comp legislation? Any idea?
No. Actually, just for the rest of this month, I've just gone through and made up the list. I have about 30-some bills in committee now that I think have a shot at making. We have 60-some bills. I went through and said there's 38 of them that I've just put lines through. But that still leaves 30-some bills left. And I was really going to start on, I have a Senate bill up next Wednesday, I think, to work on Senate bills towards the end of the month. But I'm trying to get all the House bills that I think have a shot at getting through out of this committee by the end of this month. And I'm trying to grind through it now, but I'm going to be gone for about 3 or 4 days from now to the end of the month, so it's really putting a little pressure on it.
We can take
some. Those bills in your absence.
I noticed that. I'm trying to save a few for those days. Everybody wants to know what those dates are, right?
Well, are we going to meet those days?
Yeah, I'm going to try to have some meetings. I'm going to go to Whitehorse on that trip, which is
I would hope we
Wednesday,
could
Thursday.
Schedule one.
Is it next week or the week after?
Okay. I would hope we could schedule one bill in your absence.
Yeah.
Randy's.
There's a couple I'm going to take the originals with me. Represent Mike.
Anyway, are we going to take public testimony and have teleconferences on the workers' comp?
Yeah.
When we get it, because I'm hearing a lot of negative.
Yes, we'll probably spend 3 or 4 days or more on it. It will be a major effort.
3 or 4 days
or a week or whatever it takes. We're going to do it in April, though.
I'm suspicious it may take 3 or 4 weeks.
Yeah. Well, it's we're gonna do that in April. I'm just telling people that we'll take care of workers' comp in April.
We're gonna have to probably be by then. We're probably gonna have to go around the regular meeting process.
Do an evening. Do you think
another Bradley Lake bill?
No, this is a big one.
Okay.
This is tort reform.
Other than that, we're adjourned.
Workers' comp level.